promiscuity, and I believe in trust. I believe in love.
The punk Jews are creative, artistic, they're musicians, they don't draw inside the community lines, they're from Hasidic families, they're political, they scream on stage, they make fashion out of taluses, prayer shawls, and today on Shtetl we're going to hear from Evan Kleinman, producer of a documentary film about the punk Jew movement. Also on Shtetl we have Tali Abakasis, the creator of This Really Happened, a storytelling night in Montreal, and stay tuned for Daisy Goldstein, who is going to tell the classic story about how her father had a double identity, Jewish by day, Italian by night. To listen to this episode of Shtetl or past episodes, you can go to shtetlmontreal.com.
And you believe in your Pope, and you believe in your guru, and I believe and hope that you believe, that I believe that you believe in love. Cause I believe in anything if I believe that you believe in love. I believe.
I believe in stoners and I believe in saints. I can definitely agree with that. Welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer, and we have tons of weird and wacky people today on the show for you, including this next interview that we're going to hear with Evan Kleinman. He is the co-producer of a film called The Punk Jews, which is going to be showing on November 28th at Lamoud, which is a festival of Jewish culture, arts, and learning. It's happening at the Siegel Center, and there are tons of different events happening at Lamoud that are pretty unexpected. The theme is fusion. There's going to be a woman named Beatrice Deer who's going to do Native throat singing in combination with Adam Stotlin, who's going to do Jewish Nigun singing. And there's going to be a screening of this film, The Punk Jews, with a performance by one of the people featured in the film, Why Love. He's a Jewish African-American hip-hop rapper, and he'll be at Lamoud on November 28th. So the Punk Jews are a growing movement, it seems like, starting in New York City, and Evan is going to tell us a little bit about the movement.
Punk Jews movement is an emerging movement in New York City of Jews expressing their identity in unconventional and unique ways that challenge stereotypes and break down barriers. It's a community of artists, activists, and musicians who are asserting their Jewish identity and, in most cases, defying the norm. And we, of course, have met people who also fit that bill or who are interested in taking Jewish culture and kind of thinking outside the box with it all over the world. This is clearly a growing trend, not only in the Jewish world, but culturally in general, people wanting to feel empowered by their identity, their cultural and or religious identity.
And how are they expressing their identity and their Jewishness in unconventional ways?
Well, in our film, we cover six stories. The stories range, they're quite diverse. One story is about the African-American Jewish community in New York. Orthodox African-American hip-hop artist Y Love takes us into the community. We cover a Yiddish street performance group called the Sukkos Mob, who perform on the street Yiddish theater, which people may or may not know is a huge art form, probably dating back to the early 20th century all the way to the 50s. Since then, you know, the Yiddish language and the Yiddish theater as an art form has been in decline. So there's this group called the Sukkos Mob who are kind of giving it like a new modern, like edgy flavor to it. So we also cover a Hasidic punk rock band called Mashiach Oi, who express their Judaism by screaming at the top of their lungs. Basically, the place where we discovered a lot of this kind of this cultural phenomenon going on is at a gathering that takes place once a week in New York called Shoent, where a huge diversity of Jews, a lot of Jews on the fringe, you may say, come together and have a cultural exchange.
Can you explain what Shoent is?
Oh, the actual stew. Some people may have had this made for them by their grandmothers. It can be a number of different ingredients depending on where the person making it originates, whether they come from Poland or Hungary or other places in Europe. But it's a stew that's cooked traditionally on the Sabbath, and it was kind of like a great Shabbos meal because you could just leave the stew kind of cooking on its own throughout the day, and you can just take. And it was very easy to make, also very delicious.
That explains it. Why do you think that a group that is, I don't know if you'd say they're rebelling against their Jewish community in some ways, why would they choose a name which symbolizes like one of the most traditional foods that's eaten on a Jewish holiday, the Sabbath, every week? Why did they name their group Shoent?
The punk Jewish movement is not people who are rebelling against Judaism per se.
Okay.
You have rebellions today all over the world, as we know. And with rebellion comes the sentiment that I'm right and you're wrong. The establishment is wrong and me, the rebel, is right. I wouldn't frame this as a rebellion like that. This is more just people just finding their own personal empowerment through their Judaism and through their cultural identity and finding community around it.
Would you say that a lot of the people in this group are rejected by their own community, though?
It depends how one person would look at themselves. Do they consider themselves being rejected? I mean, the word rejected is kind of a disempowering way to describe yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be rejected by one place and then accepted somewhere else, such as, being rejected maybe in a more traditional community and then being accepted at Shoent. So it all depends on how you frame it in your own mind. If you want to call yourself a reject, that kind of puts what you're doing down and kind of like invalidates.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening, I feel. So, this is all, it's all something positive. It's all people who probably, and myself included, experienced this. That's how I came upon this. Just, kind of felt like we were being forced into a box, get outside the box a little bit.
Okay, so, and the box is the traditional institutional Jewish world, and you're experimenting and exploring, fully embracing it, but in your own creative ways.
I agree to that, yes.
Okay. And so, how did you find out about the group and what?
The whole project started with me and the director, Jesse Zuckman. We were kind of exploring our own Jewish identities, and we both come from different households, mine being a more traditional one. It was very clear this is right, this is wrong fashion. He grew up in a less traditional home where it kind of had the opposite effect where, what do I do? I need to learn more to develop. Basically not feeling a proper outlet in both cases. We were actually both producers, television producers at the time, and we were just kind of would always discuss it on our own and, kind of do some research on the internet, see what's going on. Oh, wow, look at this cool story. So it basically started out as that. And then, researching and finding people on the internet, we met Y-Love. Found out about his story, and he was the one who actually took us to Shoent.
Shen Speed Stallion, Wider Mexicali, Michigan to Mali, no one overclock me like a dally. Stand down, your whole crowd couldn't stop me with a suicide bomber and 1,000 neo-Nazis. Critics automatic stretch digits to the limits on the mystic to elicit the illicit from the vision, the division, it religion, superstition, copacetic, prophetic benediction from the yidden on a mission now.
We basically became part of that, joined the community as we were ourselves seeking.
And what is a Shoent gathering? What happens at it? Is it a party?
Yeah, that's probably the most accurate way to describe it. But at the same time, it's at different locations all the time, typically because the gathering will get kicked out of one location and have to find another location. Or kind of wear out their welcome at different places. A lot of times they'll start the evening will start with something somewhat structured, whether that you know, someone presenting, give like a little lecture, some music, playing a band. And then after that finishes, and then it basically just evolves into like a party. Select the sector in the center, just remember the connector and protect the select the goal, protect the best of blessing because it's kosher. Alphabetic, cabalistic, Cali, swagadocious. River, river, with the beast, I'm a legend. Blue up, the black, gonna build up the tension. We know we can't stop, bring the power to the street, so we shout it around. Penetrating, and I love creation. Trying to spit some rhymes with a little inspiration. Hit me back when I scream salvation, salvation, salvation.
The people that you featured for the film looked like they were very diverse and had very different points of view and art practices. How do they all fit together? Like Moshiach Oy, this is a punk band, but they're Hasidic Orthodox. Then you featured this fashion designer who makes these haute couture designs using traditional Jewish elements like a talis. Are there ever people who really disagree or feel offended by other people in the group and what they're creating?
People who don't associate, I guess, with punk Jews or with Cholent are offended at times. And of course, you know, we have experienced that. But if you're asking from within the community, there's a general sentiment as we are all humans. Who are we to judge what someone else does, you know, when they're doing something in their mind is positive?
And so what kind of response have you gotten from the rest of the community in New York?
You know, it's evolved. You know, we didn't get any fundraising from the institutional Jewish world. But, you know, but
why
as
do you
the
think
project
that
has
is?
Kind of become more tangible and more real, you know, a lot of people come out of the woodwork. You know, you'd be surprised who identifies with what. You know, at that point, you know, our labels of who is what or who is in the institutional world, who is conservative, who is liberal, when those labels start to fall apart and different people come out of the woodwork to identify with a film, it starts a new community and kind of opens up people's minds to themselves and to the other.
In the movie, Wylove mentions that it's a group that is kind of repping for the religious left. What does that label mean?
Well, I think Wylove in particular associates very much with left-wing activism. You know, that's probably how, from the outside, a lot of people would identify this movement, yes. But if you were to delve deeper into it, you know, the whole idea of this film is to do away with labels.
Mm-hmm.
Labels to things like right or left is almost like belittling them, not getting to know, you know, everything's so multifaceted.
So that was Evan Kleiman of the Punk Jews, somebody who's become part of the movement and from the inside made a documentary about a bunch of the people who are involved in New York City. And like he said, as he's toured around with the film and met other communities, he's found that all around the world, people are really experimenting, exploring, and doing weird things with their Judaism in order to connect, which is pretty cool. And you can check out the movie. It's going to be premiering in Montreal at Le Mood on Monday, November 28th. And there's going to be a Skype in with the director, Jesse Cookman, and a performance by Wylove. So stay tuned. We're going to hear a little bit from Moshiach Oy, the band that was just spoken about. They're featured in the Punk Jews. And then we'll be back with Tali Abakasis.
He's gonna rent a brick. It's that time of year again. Expozine. Montreal's huge small press comic and zine fair, 10th anniversary edition. Saturday, November 26th and Sunday, November 27th at 5035 Saint-Dominique. Come discover the latest and greatest in independent publishing. Come browse titles by nearly 300 exhibitors. Come to Expozine, November 26th and 27th, with special opening and anniversary parties, all free admission. For more information, visit www.expozine.ca, a CKUT co-presentation.
When Moses ascended Mount Sinai, he went to hear God's word. When the prophet descended, he came carrying tablets inscribed with God's will.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt be fruitful and multiply.
Thou shalt and multiply.
Thou shall listen to Settle on the Short Wave on CKUT 90.3 FM.
So we're back on Settle on the Short Wave. Thou shalt listen to Settle on the Short Wave. You know? It's a commandment almost, I think. We're back with Tali Abakasis and Adam Mizrahi, who is her little new baby. Tali, welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Thank you.
Tali, so how old is Adam?
Adam is 4 months old, and thank goodness he is sleeping.
Okay, he's sleeping. So this segment of Shtetl might be done in a bit of a whisper so that we don't wake anybody up.
I'm a low talker.
You're a low talker.
Already, so in the best of times.
I'll whisper. Okay. So I want to tell people a little bit about this night that you've created called This Really Happened. It's a storytelling night, and you've done it for a while, right?
Yeah, I've done it for a while, and there have been a couple of hiatuses in between for babies. But basically, it's a night where people get up and tell stories in all different forms, all kinds of nonfiction storytelling. Oh. Somebody's opening their eyes. Sorry, it's a bit distracting. And for this, on December 6th, I've actually joined up with Carte Blanche, which is a literary magazine, and we're doing a joint event. So we'll be reading some of their stories, hearing some of their stories. We also decided to open it up to people who will tell stories without notes, because in the past I've done nonfiction storytelling in all its forms. So if you want to get up and read your interesting grocery list, if you want to read some funny emails, if you want to read... Somebody read text message haikus. Anything that's nonfiction is open. But with Carte Blanche, we decided to open it up to an even wider. Sorry, it's distracting to have a baby staring at you. To an even wider group.
Okay, Adam, if he wakes up, it's totally cool because I like I said, I had a few questions prepared for him. Okay. What's it like being a baby? What's it like? I don't know.
Yeah.
How does Adam feel about his Jewish identity?
So far, he's pretty zen about it.
Yeah?
He's okay right now. He's just...
Wait a second. You can't talk for him. These are questions for him when he wakes up. So this really happened. How did you decide to start this series? What made you want to do a live storytelling series?
Well, I'm a documentary filmmaker, so nonfiction is really my realm. And there are some things that are just not enough for, they're not films, you know, they're anecdotes, they're funny things that happened, that really happened. With my friend Claudine Sauvé, we did a book on barbershops because we were really interested in barbershops and different mediums for different stories kind of thing. Yeah, I just thought it would be really fun to get up and tell the funny stories that don't merit a book and don't merit a film.
What are some of the stories that people have told at This Really Happened, like in the past? The theme this time is
obsessions.
Yeah.
Daisy's story that she'll read later is one of the more memorable ones for me. Marco Fania read a really hilarious email exchange between him and his mom when he was in Antarctica for work, and his mom is a very typical Italian mama who would write him email, you know, he'd write to her about the spectacular vistas and the icebergs and what it was like to be on a ship. And she would write back, yes, but have you had, you know, did you have supper? Did you eat? What are you eating? What's the food like? Cheryl Fragan, who's a good friend of mine also, talked about living with a man with MS. That was very poignant and sad and touching. And she also came back and read her diary from when she was 13 years old, and it was you know, cringeworthy and hilarious. And she wrote about, you know, having a crush on different boys in her class and how she really wanted a princess phone. That was one of the more memorable ones too. There have been a lot of good stories.
What were the themes in the past?
This is actually the first time we're doing a theme. That was something we thought of with Carte Blanche, that it would sort of unify the night a little bit and give it some kind of coherence.
Okay, so why obsessions?
Because obsessions are fascinating. People who are obsessed with things are usually really interesting, and obsessions themselves are interesting. Makes for good stories.
So, like, if I wanted to read about from my diary from when I was like 16 years old or from when I was 9 years old and about being obsessed about whatever it may be, I send in the diary entry to you because people submit their stories in advance, right? It's not just an open mic night.
It's definitely not an open mic night. In the past, it's been, you'd have had to submit the whole text. So you would have had to send me the diary for me to see. And we do practice readings on the phone and stuff.
Okay.
But now, with this new category that we've opened up where you can tell stories without notes, you just kind of have to give us a sense of what you're going to be talking about. So there's, with Carte Blanche, we have I think you've linked to it on your website, the submissions website, for lack of a better term. And you just have to write a description of what you're planning.
And it's not too late to submit a story, right?
Definitely not.
People can go to the website, shtetlmontreal.com, and look in the description for today's show. There's a link to the submission page for This Really Happened. So if you're obsessed with anything and you think you have an interesting, funny, quirky story that you want to tell at a storytelling night, at 8 minutes or less, then go to shtetlmontreal.com and click on the submit link. And I think last time, there's Adam. This is a historic moment for Shtetl. It's the first time we've ever had a baby in the studio. Adam? Okay, let me ask him that question about his Jewish identity. Can you put the mic up to his mouth? No, I'm just joking.
I was going.
Were you?
Well, I don't know. He might say something intelligible, but you know.
Some people apparently can interpret baby talk and understand what all those little sounds mean. I don't know. There's a lot of things I'm hearing lately that I find are pretty incredible. Like, this is something I heard recently. People not using diapers at all for their babies. Have you heard about this? Like, not just... like not disposable, but I think it's called
elimination communication. I don't believe in it at all, because it's basically the parents have to watch the baby for signs that they're going to the bathroom, and then when they see those signs, they rush the baby off to the toilet. But as far as I'm concerned, the parents are trained, the baby's not trained.
That's true. I just can't, but like, whoever is able to do that, I would like to witness it. Do you think that's worthy? Is that worthy of a documentary? Parents who do communication elimination?
No. It's not a documentary that I would like to do.
Okay. The inside scoop on babies and training them to go to the bathroom. Like Tali said, one of the most memorable stories at This Really Happened was one that was told by Daisy Goldstein about her father, Izzy, who worked in the schmatze business. He's a Romanian Jew. And the way she describes it is her dad had a double identity. He was Jewish by day and Italian by night. So we're going to hear some music and an ad, and then we're going to be back, and Daisy is going to read the story for us live from Toronto. So stay tuned. We'll be back on Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Because she missed the scenery, the native dances and the charming songs. But wait a minute, something's wrong. Hey, mambo, mambo Italiano, hey, mambo, mambo Italiano, go, go, go. You mixed up Siciliano, all you Calabresi do the mambo like a crazy with a hey, mambo, don't want a tarantella, hey,
no more mozzarella. E mambo, mambo italiano. Try an enchilada with the fish baccalà. E gumba, I love how you dance a rumba. But take some of advice, paisano. Learn how to mambo. If you're gonna be a square, you ain't gonna go nowhere. E mambo, mambo italiano. E mambo.
This is Sarah Minna Gordon of Yiddish Princess, and you are listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
We're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave, and we've got a live baby and his mother here in the studio. There, you hear? You hear? And we also have on the phone from Toronto, Daisy Goldstein.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I am very good, very good. I've been listening online.
So what did you think of Moshiach Oi?
Oh my God, I loved it.
Really? So you're into punk?
Well, it's not my first choice, but I got into it.
Okay, cool. Okay. You should go online and check out their video. It's pretty fun. So thank you so much for taking time out of your work day to read this story. What's the story about?
Well, the story is about my dad and his double identity, and how we were all in on this lifelong crusade to pretend that we were Italian. And or at least half Italian, because we couldn't pretend that my mother was Italian. So my entire life, I just thought that this was normal until I started talking to people, and they thought that it was so outrageous. And I was like, oh, I guess it's not normal.
Okay, so what's the story called?
The story is called The Secret Life of Gianni Grimaldi.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, in Shtetl on the Shortwave, this is Daisy Goldstein. Go for it, Daisy.
Okay. The Secret Life of Gianni Grimaldi. I was born at Montreal's Jewish General Hospital, went to Talmud Torah Elementary School, had my bat mitzvah at the age of 12, and then proceeded to go to Herzliya High School, where I learned the sacred teachings of the Torah, the Talmud, and how to forge my mother's signature to get out of gym class. And like many Montreal Jews, my father was in the textile business, or as we Montrealers call it, the shmata business. Last summer, we went on a long-anticipated family trip back to the homeland, to the sacred ancient promised land of our forefathers, to the one place where I feel like I truly belong, Italy. Yes, you heard right. My father, born Izzy Isaac Goldstein, was better known in some circles as Gianni Grimaldi. But how did a nice Jewish man like my dad have such a good, solid Italian name? Well, back in the 50s, my grandparents immigrated to Montreal from Bucharest, Romania. While most of the Jews congregated on Chabanel Street, my grandfather quickly set up shop on St. Hubert in the heart of the Italian Shmata district. My grandfather's real name was Moses, which was a little too Old Testament for his liking. So he Francified himself and called the store Tisu Michel. When people asked him where he was from, he said Romania. He was proud of his Romanian heritage. But he didn't dare say he was Jewish. You see, being Jewish wasn't as cool back then as it is today. He feared that if his customers discovered his dirty little secret, they would just stop coming. As a teenager, my father, the young and impressionable Izzy Goldstein, worked at the store part-time after school. My grandfather started calling him John or Johnny in front of the customers. It was the first Christian-sounding name that popped into his head. Being very adept with languages, my father learned how to speak Italian from his customers. And after my grandfather retired and was safely tucked away in the suburbs, my father decided that he would take the myth to also a whole other level. He merely had to drop a few letters in the word Romanian, and voila, suddenly he was Roman. A little tweaking, and the name Johnny turned into Gianni. The transformation was complete. For years, my father lived a double life. By day, he was Gianni Grimaldi, born in a small village atop the Abruzzi Mountains in Italy. By night, he was Izzy Goldstein, father, TV watcher, schnitzel eater. That's just the way it was. The customers loved Gianni, and he loved them right back. He would joke around with the men in their native tongue and flirt with the older Italian ladies. He knew what it took to make a sale. Una buona misura, he would say, before artfully cutting a generous amount of fabric in front of them. It meant, here's a little more, just in case. But my father's double identity required upkeep. He constantly had to cover his tracks. And the rest of us Goldsteins, Grimaldis, became his accomplices in the big lie. First of all, there was no easy way to explain my mother. In Israeli, with a noticeable accent, my mother was shockingly unwilling to denounce her Judaism. My brother, sister, and I would go to the store on weekends to hang out. And on busier days, my mother would help Gianni with the customers. Though it pained him, Gianni had no choice but to tell his loyal clientele that although he was a devout Roman Catholic, he fell in love with a Jewish girl and married her. But his three children, he assured them, were just as Christian as Jesus himself. We were instructed not to speak about our religious tendencies in front of the customers. If anyone should ever find out that my father wasn't actually Italian, and even worse, Jewish, life as we knew it would cease to exist. People would start to gossip. Then the customers would stop coming to the store. We would be ostracized by our own paisans. The consequences were too horrible to imagine. But despite our best efforts, sometimes we slipped. Once, when I was about 10, my mother and I went to see Madame Vincenza, our Italian dressmaker and one of Gianni's best customers. It was Christmas time, and the front of her modest house in Little Italy was ablaze with lights and sparkling ornaments. We walked up the snowy staircase into the narrow entranceway of her house. Before we knew what hit us, we were faced with a huge, elaborate nativity scene featuring tiny baby Jesus, Mary Magdalene, some random shepherds, and various biblical farm animals. Trying to be polite, my mother exclaimed, "Wow, that's so nice. What is it?" "What is it?" Madame Vincenza exclaimed in a thick Italian accent. She was visibly horrified. A wave of panic overtook me. The jig is up. My mother had just ruined everything. I knew that one day she would betray my father. She was even worse than Judas. "Oh, you see, my husband is Catholic, but I'm Jewish," my mother said. "Yes, I know," said Madame Vincenza with a twinge of sadness. "But being married to a good Italian boy, you must have seen one of these before." Oh yes, of course I know what it is, but I've never seen one this beautiful," my mother explained. "Uh-huh," Madame Vincenza answered, suspicious. She looked at my mother square in the eyes, searching for weakness. "Okay. You can come in." Relief washed over me like hot marinara sauce over penne. We were safe, for now. A few years later, when I was about 13 years old, we visited a different dressmaker, a young lady probably in her early 30s. Surely we didn't have to lie to her. Surely she didn't care if we were Jewish. As she took my measurements in front of the full-length mirror, the dressmaker started asking me questions about what I wanted to do with my life. "I want to be a journalist," I said enthusiastically. She was very excited by my response. "I can see it now, your name on the TV screen, Daisy Grimaldi, reporting live from Washington." "By the way, how do you spell Grimaldi? It's for my records." "Now, if somebody asks you to spell your last name, you could just rattle it off, no problem. Goldstein, for example, is G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N. But Grimaldi didn't quite roll off the tongue. I was caught off guard. I turned beet red as I started to spell my Italian last name. LDI. Phew, I did it. She had no clue that I was faking it. Another close call. What kind of aspiring journalist can't even spell her last name? So she thought I was an idiot, but at least my father's identity was still safely in the vault. I wondered if my father was really terrified of people finding out he was Jewish, or whether he simply loved being Italian. Sometimes I would go to the store, sit behind the counter, and watch my father in action. He had his whole persona down, the fluent speech and exaggerated hand gestures, his tailored pants cuffed at the bottom and neatly pressed shirts with the letter G sewn onto the left pocket, his leather loafers, gold pinky ring, and the pièce de résistance, his gold ID bracelet with the name Gianni etched on it. He was the star of his own Fellini film and loving every second of it. Maybe my father was afraid that under all the tailor-made suits, if he didn't have Gianni to turn to, he would just be plain old Izzy Goldstein, who worked in the shmata business, just like every other guy he grew up with. This way, he could have his meatball and eat it too.
Yay, you've got a little the shortwave. Daisy Grimaldi reads about her dad. That's awesome. Thank you, Daisy, so much for reading that and for giving people a taste of what can happen at This Really Happened.
Thanks, Daisy.
My pleasure.
Daisy, do you think you might come back to Montreal sometime and do more This Really Happened?
I'm thinking about it. I submitted a story, so we'll see if I have a good story about obsessions.
Tally.
Also about my family. So we'll see if it works out.
Okay, so we look forward to seeing you possibly at This Really Happened on December 6th. Thanks so much, Daisy, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, take care.
You too.
So that was Daisy Goldstein. We're going to be back on Shtetl on the Shortwave in just a minute to hear a little bit more from the Punk Jews and last little bit about This Really Happened. Stay tuned.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June, I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking, come this here July.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer. I thought it would be fitting to play a little bit of Frank Sinatra after Daisy Goldstein's story. And Tally, just before you get going with Adam, do you want to tell people where this really happens?
Yeah, well, this will be our first time doing it at Cafe Sarajevo on Saint Laurent. It's December 6th at 8 p.m. Story start at 8 p.m. Doors open at 7. At Cafe Sarajevo.
All right, I'll be there.
Yeah, we hope as many people as possible can come out.
Okay, thank you for making the effort to come here with your baby, with the stroller, with everything.
No worries, the baby's fed up. The baby's done with radio.
Well, you never know. It's just a first exposure. Okay, he's done. All right. All right, he's done. Thanks, Tally. So we have one more little clip from Evan Kleinman about the punk Jews. The movement focuses on all types of diversity in the Jewish community, and one of the people that he features in the movie is Ylov, who will be coming to Montreal. And in this next clip that you're going to hear, Evan talks about the Jews of color and a little bit about how Ylov interacted with that community for the film. So this is Evan Kleinman of Punk Jews.
Is it, people have the misconception that in America, at least, that Jew equals white, and that Jewish America is a subset of white America. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, there's large numbers of Jews that are non-white, not, in Israel, 70% of the population is of Arab descent. And even in America, we've read statistics that say there's 400,000 Jews of color in America. That includes black Jews, Latino Jews, Asian Jews. You can't even define Judaism as being one thing, as being a religion, or being a culture, or being an ethnicity, or being... That's why people end up calling it a peoplehood, because there's no other way to really describe it. So... Ylov being a black Jewish hip-hop artist, we thought we had found the most unique Jew that you could possibly find. But he's quick to point out that, he's part of a much larger community. There is an established African-American Jewish community in New York, and he takes us to a friend of his by the name of Chase Rishon, and he's also known as the blogger Manish Tana. He runs a Jews of Color resource as a blog. Of course, Manish Tana meaning wise is different. Mm-hmm. And we go into their house to meet the family, and the whole narrative of that segment is getting ready for Shabbos. And essentially what the segment really says is that the family is doing what every other Jewish family is doing right now. One thing that Chase, as a Jews of Color activist, hopes to accomplish is that hopefully soon we won't have interviews like this, is what he says to Ylov. Mm-hmm. Ylov asks him, what is the goal that you hope to accomplish? That Jews of color are no longer seen as a novelty in the community and just seen as part of the diverse framework of the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm. What's the story with Moshiach Oy?
The song that is in the trailer that you probably saw is actually called Baruch Hashem, and that's what he's saying, Baruch Hashem, and screaming it. That's his way of expressing his spirituality. One important element to discuss about them is that they're Breslov Hasidim. So, if you've been to Israel and some other places, maybe it also takes place, you may see the group that calls themselves the Nanach, and they dance around singing the phrase, Nanach Nachman Nachman Nu'aman. So that's a big part of their the message they're trying to get out, is of their spiritual leader, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Where some people may, whisper from a prayer book to express themselves to God, they express themselves by screaming at the top of their lungs. Huh. So, that's basically when we go into their studio, which they call Camp Shabbos. we cover a show at the Karl Bach show where they end up getting kicked off stage. But, they're basically, a group that is so devout and so passionate in what they're doing and yet not accepted by the wider religious world.
All right, so that was Evan Kleinman of the Punk Jews. He's become part of the movement, and he also made a film about it that's going to be showing at Lamoud on Monday, November 28th. And you can find out more about Lamoud by going to Lamoud, L-E-M-O-O-D.ca. And there are tons of interesting sessions happening. There's a session about separatism and Judaism with Guy Boutier, who is a he was the head of the Société Saint-Jean-Baptiste and is also enamored with Jewish text and Jewish learning. So he's going to be there, and a whole bunch of other very unexpected sessions. So check that out, lemood.ca. And since we were just hearing a little bit about Why Love, I thought I'd give you a listen. He'll be there performing live also. So stay tuned. We'll be back on Stellan shortly.
Speed stallion, wide Mexicali, Michigan to Mali, no one overclocked me like a dally. Stand down, your whole crowd couldn't stop me with a suicide bomber and 1,000 neo-Nazis. Critics automatic stretch digits to the limits on the mystic to elicit the illicit from the vision, the division in religion, superstition, copacetic, prophetic benediction from the yidden on a mission now. Street hop to bebop, we've lead cops coming with the sirens on. Behind bars, man, yo, it's been real long, but I'm never going back. TV, make the music clap. Hold on, let's climb some mountains. Bottom to the top, with my peace be counting. We gonna rise above cloud and rainstorm. Too righteous, so I never made the same song. This is a ticking now, watch as we raising them. Rage pink heads going straight for the cranium. Manifest the radiance, existence is infinite. Paradigm shift, cause the present is derelict in Babylon infected. Intellect the sector in the center, just remember the connector and protector, the selector. Go project the best of blessing cause it's kosher. Alphabetic, cabalistic, Cali, swagadocious.
Liver, liver, with the beat, some of them some blow up, the black, gonna build up detention. We know we can't stop, bring the power to the streets, so we shout it around. Meditating and all of creation, trying to spit some rhymes with a little inspiration. Hit me back when I scream salvation, salvation, salvation. DJ Batman, boom, selector, pop up the track, every shot down the sector. We'll be back for another semester, let's start Brooklyn.
All right, we're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave. That was Why Love, and I interviewed Why Love last year, and I have to say, he's one of the most interesting people I've spoken to. He really speaks his mind, and he raps in Hebrew, in Aramaic, in Arabic, English, even a little bit in Yiddish, and he's going to be at Lemood on November 28th, and I thought we would go out before we get to the next awesome show, Butcher T's Noontime Cuts. I thought we'd go out with one more really punk Jew from Canada, my favorite, Jeff Berner, and this song is called I Kind of Hate Songs with Ambiguous Lyrics. So this is Jeff Berner. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to listen to this or any other episode of Shtetl on the Shortwave, just go to shtetlmontreal.com.
Boys and girls were singing, frankly, I don't know what the fuck they were singing about. And I said to myself, I guess these are impressionistic lyrics. And frankly, I'm not impressed, because I cannot, I sort of, I kinda hate the ambiguous ones. I cannot, I sort of, I kinda hate the ambiguous ones. Let's go. Beating people in the street. All you gotta say is bleep, 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 bleep. Thought you have something that you love enough and that you wanna clearly defend. But you suck, cannot. The closet Anglican. Because I cannot.